you lovely people in internet land, and welcome to episode 111 of Game Life Balance Australia. I'm your host, Robert Bailey, and I'm joined as always by our new Minister for Education, Andrew A.C. Yoshimura.
The kids are going to learn damn good. As Education Minister, I have decided to get rid of a whole bunch of letters in the alphabet, because that's certainly within my purview. X, right out. Don't need X anymore. Q, you can just put like K and a W there, exactly. So that's out. No more of that. And I'm getting rid of T.
Okay.
Because it just looks at me funny.
Shifty character T.
Shifty character, no more T's.
Yeah.
So the rest of the podcast will be done without the letter T, Q,
okay,
and X.
I'll make it.
I'll make a good go of said
instruction? No, damn it!
It's really hard.
Okay, all right. Okay. Maybe we'll have... I'll pin the tea thing for the time being.
Okay, tea contemporarily.
But just for today.
Have a home here.
Just for today. And speaking of which, today, it's been a while since our last episode.
It sure has, AC. It's actually, you know, it's heinous because we spent it was a long time since we recorded the last episode, yeah. And then an even longer time since I uploaded it. So the poor people, the poor listeners will probably hear this at Christmas, the way we're going.
We need to do something once a year to keep our copyright.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the copyright ownership.
It's the only reason we do it.
So
I don't even talk to you other than once a year when we record this podcast.
Oh, we hate each other off air.
I don't like this man at all. But I need to maintain this IP. It's very important to me.
Extremely important. So today we did actually have a listener request.
Yes.
Or a listener demand, actually.
Yes.
I'm kind of a bit of a dick.
Our fan base is small, but very demanding.
So he says, I want you to review a new game called Pizza Tower. So today, we're going to review Pizza Tower, except we're not, because neither of us own the game, and we haven't played it. So
it does tend to make it a bit harder to review
a game. A little bit harder, yeah. So, okay, so we're gonna knock the Pizza Tower thing on the head. It looks like a fun game. I want to play it one day. I'll grab it when it's on special in a few years or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually kind of like a spiritual successor to Wario Land.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, I do own most of the Wario Land series.
So we thought, well, maybe we'll play Wario Land, and then that's almost as good as Pizza Tower, right?
Yeah. oh boy. So, a little bit of a story there. Good news is I have the game.
Yes.
We were going to give it a go, play it. It's been a while since I played Wario Land, actually. Mm-hmm. Then,
bad news is,
I tried to boot it up on the... Because we both need to play it, even though it's a Game Boy game. You know, I have lots of Game Boys, but we both need to be watching it at the same time.
We need to witness it at the same time, you see.
Yeah.
That's crucial.
So, ran into a little bit of a problem. I could not locate the power cord for my Super Nintendo. We were going to use the Game Boy player, the Game Boy, Super Game Boy 2. The clear blue one. That
didn't work out.
They didn't work out. I have like 10 or 11 consoles all hooked up in my setup.
The world's biggest power brick at the back of the thing.
Yeah. That's and I usually leave all of that stuff turned off for a good reason. And at some point, the power cable fell out of the back of the the Super Nintendo. And I, for the life of me, it's so crowded back there. I, for the life of me, could not find it. Like, I had Rob with my phone torch like shining at the back, and I was on my knees swearing, and I just...
Mm-hmm.
I put it in the too hard basket. So I thought, well, Wario... What's another Wario game where you can play made in Wario?
So
we played WarioWare.
Yeah, that's basically as good as Pizza Tower, so shut up.
Yeah.
Go to
shut
hell.
Your face. You have a problem with that? You come take it up with me, wanna, bitch.
Yeah, eat your dessert.
You're lucky you get this.
Spoiled brat.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so basically, I like how we just... Let's call him Andrew L. No, that's too obvious. A. Lynch.
The one person that listens to this podcast.
He's going to hate us.
Let's go after him really hard.
So basically, we decided to play Made in Wario.
Yeah.
In WarioWare.
Yes, I hadn't played... Actually, I realised I hadn't played... I don't think this version of WarioWare.
No, and this is... So this is another kind of weird thing, is that we played what is effectively the Game Boy Advance version. So I think that's the first one. But we played the GameCube version of it. So there's a GameCube version, and it's basically the Game Boy version, just with a few bells and whistles and extra stuff. So we are reviewing the Game Boy Advance version of WarioWare.
But we played it on the GameCube.
Yes, we did.
With a fun projector setup, might I add, which added something. I don't know what it added, but it did add something.
This is my life. It is literally easier for me to pipe something through a GameCube and a projector than it is to find a power cable at the back of my television setup. Welcome to my life.
This is where we're at. So, anyway. So that, yeah, we played WarioWare. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a darn good game. It's still fun.
It is still a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll jump into that now.
Yeah.
First installment was WarioWare Inc. Mega Micro Games. That's the English title. In Japan, it is just called Made in Wario.
Right, okay.
When
did it come out?
2003, apparently.
Wow, okay. It's actually a lot older than I thought it was.
Yeah, I suppose it would be... celebrating its 20th anniversary this year.
Huh.
Which is pretty cool. I didn't see any hype about that on Twitter at all, so I guess people just didn't know. And, like, it's spawned a very popular kind of series. With middling... Like, it's not constant quality.
No.
There are some really good ones, and there are some really okay ones, and then there's some kind of shit-ass terrible ones.
The original idea, though, was great. Like, just the idea of a bunch of really weird mini-games that are, like, fun and fast and are presented to you rapidly, so you have to quickly grasp the idea of the mini-game and then execute all in, like, a matter of seconds. Like, that's really fun, and, like, the whole idea... Like, yeah, the first couple of ones of it, I think, really... were still fresh and exciting, but after like four or five of these, you know, like they have to kind of try different things to keep it interesting. Like I remember the DS one had was all stylus based, and they were trying to get you to do all the games with the stylus, you know, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
And I assume, I can't remember, but with the Wii, there may have been, was there motion control stuff?
It was all motion control. Yeah. You and I finished that one, actually.
Mm. Okay, so yeah, I have played it. Those brain cells have been killed long ago.
Yeah, no, it was when we were living in Garen, I think, when we first got the Wii.
Okay.
We kind of played through the whole game, like in a couple of sittings, and it's okay. Like, that one's all right. I know a lot of people didn't like it because of the motion control gimmick, but, you know, it was enjoyable when I played it,
You
know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whenever it was. So, you know, they have the stylus one. There's also a one with a little accelerometer in it.
Oh.
For the Game Boy Advance,
okay.
Goro Goro. I'm not sure what it's called in English. Mm. Basically, like twisty turny or something like that. Called MarioWare Twisted is probably, I'm guessing that's what it's called. And yeah, you have to kind of turn the Game Boy upside down and around and around. And so that's a pretty good one. The DS one I've got, that's all right. But yeah, the stylus gimmick kind of wears out its welcome after a while. They released like a really good compilation for the 3DS.
Oh, okay.
Which had like a whole bunch of the mini games that didn't really rely on. It did have an accelerometer because the 3DS has an accelerometer in there, I think.
Right.
So it had a few of those games, but it was just like a massive, massive collection of most of the mini games up to that point, which was good.
Yeah.
It's a really good kind of portable game.
Yes. I think that's where it shines, really, is like on a handheld, where it's just like there's just a whole lot of variety in that little cartridge.
So I think the conceit of the game is kind of they're all what they call micro games.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a timer, the game comes up, you have to figure out what you have to do with the game at the snap of a finger.
Yeah, quickly figure out, A, what to do, and then B, do it. Like, you have to just very quickly do those two things.
Mm.
And sometimes you spend too much time trying to figure out what to do, and you don't have enough time to, like, do the thing. Or other times you you just start doing something and then it's wrong. Like, you know, yeah, it can be tricky. Like, and that's why I think it's a bit of replayability, because the more you play the game, the more familiar you get with the mini games and stuff.
Yeah.
And you'll eventually see the same ones over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they speed up as you go through the levels, and yeah. They do have bosses. So there's a whole bunch of different characters. I think usually the conceit is that Wario's getting his mates in to try and help him make a game to make money.
He's always about money for things. He's a real capitalist.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
So this doesn't actually have Waluigi. It's only ever has Mario. Wario and his kind of
his gang, which seems to be like a bulldog and like a chick with like a helmet. And,
yeah. There's like a little
Afro guy.
I think his name is called. Yeah. There's Jimmy,
the disco guy.
Jimmy the disco guy. Yeah.
Kind of looks like he belongs in oh, what's that game called? I sound like a maniac now. Katamari Damacy.
Okay.
Katamari Damacy, yeah. Yeah.
He does look a bit like that. Yeah. And, there's robots and all the mini-games, they have a loose theme depending on the level. Like, Wario's is like the introduction level and kind of gets you used to the games. And then there's Jimmy, who does the sports sort of games. And then there's the girl and the cat and the little boy, I think 8-bit or 16-bit or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And his are the most interesting because his are all referencing Nintendo games and products.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Yeah, it's like a little like blast through the past kind of thing, like retro game little moment there.
Yeah, there's like NES, Famicom games. They reference toys that Nintendo has made in the past, because Nintendo was a toy company before.
Mm-hmm.
It was a video game company. It was actually a card company, playing cards. And they even reference stuff like the Virtual Boy. I think this is the only time Nintendo has actually referenced or talked about Virtual Boy.
There's one game that's like a Virtual Boy game and all the graphics are red.
Mm.
And it's really funny. And then there's like a Rob the Robot bit. There's a moment with Rob the Robot.
Yeah.
It's just all these sort of throwbacks. So, like, if you're a real Nintendo fan, you know, like, yeah, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's fun. And at the end of every level, there's a boss. And it's kind of a bit more, it's not a micro game.
No.
It's more of a, it's a bit more extended and you have to think a little bit about
it. Sequences to it. You have to do 4 or 5 things or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have finished this game on the Game Boy Advance. I think I finished all of the WarioWare games that I have, except for Game & Wario, which is the Wii U version, and that's not a good Wario game. Okay. Unfortunately.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, so, look, there's a whole bunch of characters, there's a whole bunch of, like, kind of themes around all of these micro games. They speed up, they get increasingly more difficult with new characters, but they also have unlockables as well, so...
Okay.
You don't know who the last characters are, and you need to play games very, very quickly. There's just like a kind of an infinite mode where it just plays through all the games and just keeps getting quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker and quicker.
And it randomizes like the theme.
Yeah.
So it's not like any particular theme of, you know, because all the different characters have different themed games, but there's one mode that just mixes them all together and crazy mix. Yeah.
And basically, it's just a survival mode to see how far you can get. And it's enjoyable. Like, you can play... Anyone can play these games. You just got to be quick on the controller. Some of them are timing-based. Some of them are action-based.
That's one of the good things about it. It's like, it's just a pick-up-and-play thing. Like, anyone can play this game. It's very, very low bar to entry. Like, almost the lowest bar to entry of any game, I think, really. Yeah.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
kind
easy.
Of...
Maybe only Donut County might be even easier.
Yeah, that's probably the only game I can think of.
Yeah.
Like, and it's easy to play, difficult to master. Mm. Unfortunately, a lot of the games that I have are the Japanese version.
That was a setback when... Because there's one round, there's like a little guy that asks you what they call IQ. Like the category is IQ.
Yeah.
And they're all like brain kind of game. Oh, you have to look at a pattern and recognize which one is the odd one out or something like that. So they're all pretty like doable. But then there's a few that are just a bunch of Japanese text and then it makes you pick with the answer. And like at that point, I'm just guessing, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
So be aware of that. Get the English one.
Get the English version, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of important.
I do... Like, I can read Japanese, but sometimes it's so quick that I don't have enough time to read
it. It's like not quickly, not with that, like, the bomb at the bottom of the screen with the fuse.
Yeah, so that's how it's a timer. The timer is basically like there's a bomb and there's a fuse.
Yeah, cartoon bomb. Yeah, classic.
Yeah. It's a really good game. Like it spawned a really good, really fun series. And as I said before, they're not all bangers.
No.
But they're still...
There's some good ones.
There are some good ones. It's still very pick up and play and easy. Would you recommend this game?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's easy. It's really easy to recommend. It's such a, like, people pleaser, you know? Like, it's... And you get sick of it. It's the kind of game where you want to kind of play it. Good game for, like, the bus or the plane or something. Like, you play it for a bit. And then you're kind of done, you know. You don't want to keep playing it for hours. It'd probably drive you crazy if you played this game for more than, like, an hour at a time, I'd say. Because, yeah, it's just so repetitive and, like, the games come so quickly and the music's so crazy, it would break you. But, like, if you're looking for a game that's just, like, a fun dip-in, dip-out thing and over time you get better at it and, you know, slowly unlock everything, it's... And it's just, it's funny and a quirky thing. So, like, when I got my DS, it was one of the first games I got was the WarioWare DS because I was like, this is just a quirky... game that I kind of need to have in my collection because it's such an oddity and it still has that appeal. So if you like Nintendo games but you're looking for something that's very, very different, it does stand out from the crowd of Nintendo games as like as unusual.
Yeah.
Like you're picking your nose and stuff like that in this game. It's weird.
Yeah, there are a few like kind of gross out sort of things.
Funny, yeah.
Like snot dripping from a woman's nose and you have to press the E button to suck it back up.
Yeah, it's funny.
Nose picking and you know, a lot of them are kind of surreal.
Yes, it's a surreal kind of humor to it that I enjoy a lot. I think that's part of the reason why I liked it so much when I was younger. And I still kind of have a fondness for it because it's silly, you know, and it doesn't take itself seriously. And it's just a weird thing. And like Japanese Nintendo games, stuff are not typically known for their sense of humor, but this is like really, really, really funny game. And yeah, it just shows that.
It just shows that
Nintendo can be funny. If they want
to
be.
They're not always family friendly, you know. And this is not that this game is not family friendly. It's very family friendly. It's just, it's bizarre in a way that Nintendo... often is not.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a, you know, as I said, it spawned a good series. I would recommend this game.
Yeah, for sure.
I would recommend almost any of the WarioWare games.
Yeah.
Just as a pick up and play and have a bit of fun. I think there is like one exclusive download only game, which you can't get anymore. I think that's when the only one that's not available anymore because it was like for the... for the DSi, if I remember correctly, and that shop's gone.
Yeah,
there's a Dodo now, unfortunately.
It's one of the problems with the digital marketplaces, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, it is tricky.
But one of the problems is that this game is a little niche. Like, it's nowhere near as popular as a lot of other Nintendo games are, or franchises are, but it definitely has a core kind of fan base. And that means that the games on the second-hand market are actually a bit expensive,
okay.
Unfortunately. So, yeah, if you do see one for cheap, probably pick it up. I would recommend... I think the best version is the 3DS WarioWare Gold, where it just has a whole bunch or most of the mini-games up to that point. And that kind of gives you pretty much everything that you'd want out of the WarioWare series. I don't know how common that is now. They're making a new WarioWare for the Switch as well.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to be motion-based, though. Yeah. I don't know if it's a remake or if it's a new one. But I'm sure like it references itself and it has will often use some of its concepts and games again in new versions and new ways. The previous WarioWare for the Switch was not very good, unfortunately, because it was kind of... You have a character who can only do one thing, like shoot left or shoot right or up down or move in a weird pattern, and then you had to finish these mini games with like that one kind of character.
Yeah.
And it kind of got a bit, like, annoying. It wasn't as fun when you had to kind of go through that, and it just wasn't as creative as it used to be. So hopefully this next WarioWare game will...
Yeah, re-enliven the franchise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So that's two recommendations from us.
It's a classic. You know, you want to see where it all started. Like, they're all good games, like you said, but this is, like, the first one. So that's worthy checking out, even in and of itself, I think.
Yeah. Definitely. WarioWare. I'll see GBA. Let's see how much it's going for. I'm just curious. $95 for the Japanese version. Jesus Christ.
Oh dear.
Someone's trying to sell the box of WarioWare Twisted for $220. Yeah, look, this ain't cheap on the second-hand market, unfortunately. It's over $100 if you want an English version. So, be a dirty pirate. Pirate the hell out of that game.
Mateys.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like something Nintendo is offering on any of their current services anyway, so I'll give that a whatever because they're Nintendo. But let's move on to the game life segment. Robbie, did you want to go first today?
Yeah, I can go first. Why the hell not, AC?
Yeah.
So last time we recorded, I was telling you that I'd been basically playing nothing but Hell Let Loose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I've been doing. And I was like, ah, be nice to find a game that would, like, you know, distract me from Hell Let Loose. Like, something else to do, a bit of variety, you know? So, I was just pitching around looking for different things to play. And then I realized that, like, Dwarf Fortress was available on Steam. So, I ended up actually buying Dwarf Fortress and playing that on Steam for a little while. So, it's like they spent a couple of years actually taking time off developing the game to just create a playable, like, Steam version with a proper graphical user interface that's, like, that's like mouse-driven and like, actual sprites and stuff. Yeah, so the game is still... It's still Dwarf Fortress with all of its complexity and, like, crazy weird systems and stuff, but it's a lot more player-friendly now.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like... Because I was initially daunted at getting back into it because I know... Getting back into Dwarf Fortress means spending a week or two just remembering how to play the game, you know, before you even start having fun. But it only took me like an afternoon and plus having the wiki open to kind of get back into playing Dwarf Fortress in a pretty, like, involved way. So that was cool. Yeah, so Dwarf Fortress is still a very rad game and very weird and complex, and I've talked about it before, but there's just no game like it that has the complex systems. It's not even that it's, like, a particularly, like, realistic sim or anything like that. It's just that the complexity of the systems is, like, nothing is really quite like it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in World Generation, the cultures will come up with, like poetry, right? For, like, the events that happen when the civilizations are, like, forming and, like, wars are being fought and, like, mythological beasts are being slain and these, like, poems get written. And then... the civilizations that you're part of, your dwarves are part of, will have particular poems that they, like, tell and, like, pass down and stuff. And so I built a tavern, and one of the things that the dwarves do in taverns is they, like, sing and, like, tell poetry and tell stories and stuff like that.
Dwarf poetry slam.
Yeah, so there's all these dwarves, like, doing poetry and singing and, like, but the stuff that they're reciting is, like, not just a random thing. It's, like, this 100-year-old poem that was created when, like, you know, after this guy slayed this dragon or something like that. Like, it's cool that it has that level of detail to it. And if you don't need to go looking for it if you don't want to, but if you poke under the hood, it's just crazy how detailed that game is and how everything is... pretty much everything is procedurally generated. Like, there's no or very few scripted events in the game. And even the things that are scripted, like, you know, there's a reason for it. So, dicked around with Dwarf Fortress for a while. I've been having, like, wear animal trouble.
So, question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much is the graphical interface upgraded? We're talking, like, 8-bit kind of...
It's, like, proper little sprites. They don't animate, but they're, like... They move so that instead of having a grid of ASCII characters, it's now a grid of sprites.
Okay.
So, it still functions in that way of, like... You know, you're moving up and down Z levels, and then it's, like, on an XY grid of characters, but instead of, like, it being little keyboard characters. They're now like proper sprites, and they'll differentiate the sprite depending on like what the thing looks like as well. So it's not just like this one sprite for dwarves. There's like a bunch of different sprites for dwarves depending on what like color their hair is or whatever, what they're wearing and things like that. So it's pretty detailed. Yeah, they're working with a proper team to bring it across to make that graphical version of the game. And they're also developing like they're focusing on making it playable on Steam, but now they're moving into like in the adventure mode ready for Steam. And then they're going to, once they've got it up and running, they're going to just keep development going.
Okay.
So it's still a work in progress, like it was like 20 years ago, and it probably will be for the next 20 years.
Wow.
But it's a cool thing that it's now available on Steam. And I thought, you know, I'll chuck them $40. It's $45. It's not a cheap game, but I thought it's worth it to keep the lights on. And like, because they basically were the original.
They run on donations.
Yeah. Like before, they were doing like open early access shit before there was a name for it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But funny thing is that like that, even though that like captured me, and for a while I thought, oh, this is going to be my new hyper fixation that I'm just going to like focus on for the next 3 months. I haven't been playing Dwarf Fortress for the last few weeks. I haven't been playing it for probably about a month, actually, because the game that has actually caught my attention and is I'm absolutely obsessed with is Silent Hunter 3, which is a hardcore submarine simulation game set in World War II.
Okay.
Where you command a U-boat, like a German submarine in World War II. Yeah, and it's like a proper, like, hardcore sim that's meant to be, like, immersive, so you can walk around inside your U-boat and, like, talk to the different officers in the boat.
So are you the captain?
Yeah, you're the captain, yeah. But then you can also control the boat through, like, keyboard commands and different things like that. And I am, because I've been interested in getting the game because I watched a guy on YouTube. This all came about because I found this YouTube channel where this guy plays this game. And I was just fascinated by it. And for a while, I was just watching his videos because I was like, this is really, really cool. But there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to play this game. It looks way too complicated and, like, difficult.
Hmm.
And, like, just a lot of big learning curve. Like, there's no way I have time to, like, learn this game. But, like, the more I watched, I've been watching it and watching it. Like, it was my favorite thing to do at night was to watch this guy play this submarine game. And, yeah, eventually I kind of went, fuck it, I'm just going to, like, check it out. And I found that it was on sale on Steam for, like, $1. It was, like, $1. I'm like, well, I may as well get it because it's $1. And then this rabbit hole, right? Because I installed it, and then there's this huge like modding community for this game, and like the guy who was playing it on YouTube has modded the shit out of the game to make it like look good, because it's a game from like 2006.
Oh,
it's a really
okay.
old game. Mm. So Silent Hunter is an old series. Silent Hunter 3 is the game that's probably the most popular, and it came out in 2006. Yeah, what you're playing is a German U-boat. So you're playing, yeah. You know, on the side of the Nazis in World War II. Then there's Silent Hunter 4, sorry, which was the American. So you're an American sub in Silent Hunter 4, and then Silent Hunter 5, I think, might have gone back to being the Germans again. But the reviews for 4 and 5 are not as good as 3. And, like, the whole consensus in this very passionate community I discovered, the submarine simulation community, very, very passionate community. Silent Hunter 3 is apparently, like, the one to play. Because it's the most realistic and the mods are really good. So, like, the modifications I've installed change the game, like, so much and make it so much cooler. And then I found, like, because it's a really old game, it typically runs letterboxed on your screen, and, like, because it's a four... It's a square,
4x3.
Right?
Yeah, that's
so
a bit
crazy. So I had to find a mod to, like, make it play in 1080p. And, like, just the process of, like, figuring out how to mod this really old friggin' game was its own, like, a journey in and of itself, right? And I finally found, like, in this forum, buried in a forum somewhere, this guy explaining, like, really clearly how to install this game in 2020s and, like, mod it and play it on a modern computer. And when I found that, I was like, yes, I finally know. And then I did everything he said, like, you know, followed his word to the letter, and the game's running on my computer and looking great and playing really well. And
nice.
Yeah, it's been fucking fun. So it's a hardcore game. Like, it's a proper sim. I tried to get into, like, flight sims and stuff years ago, like DCS and things like that, yeah. But I never could because I found it too difficult, you know, and too much work. The submarine is a little bit easier to control than a plane, you know, like, you don't have to land it. You don't have to, like, you just kind of set courses, and as long as like things can go wrong, and I'll tell you about those in a moment, but but for the most part, a lot easier than flying, you know. And I went through my little, there's an academy, a naval academy, they make you go through to like a tutorial where I learned how to like pilot the boat, submerge, like set courses and like use the rudder to turn it manually and stuff, like go deeper, you know, and see how deep you can go, just basic navigation stuff. And then the next one was like gunnery, like using the gun, because the submarine, in addition to torpedoes, had like a gun mounted on the deck that they would use to attack like basically unarmed defenseless ships, because they wouldn't bother using the gun on anything bigger than like anything that was like able to shoot back. They wouldn't use it on it. Was very sort of what you realize about the submarines in World War II is a very cowardly endeavor. So you pull up to like an unarmed merchant ship and just shoot it with your gun until it sinks, and then you like problem solved. So yeah, gunnery, I've mastered that. And then there was the whole torpedo course, which was really difficult because so the game models realistic torpedo shooting. So to shoot a torpedo in a moving target, you have to it's like trigonometry essentially. You have to work out like how fast the target's moving, what bearing they are from your location, like what angle, you know,
yeah,
and what speed they're moving at and everything. And then from that, you can work out like a solution for the torpedo, so that it knows whether to shoot straight or, because you can, the torpedoes all had little like gyroscopes in them, and you could like set in World War II, you could set it so that it, after you launch it, it would like turn a little bit.
Oh, so that's clever.
But to make it a bit easier, in World War I, you had to do this all manually, apparently, like with like a calculator, pen and paper. But like in World War II, they had the U-boats and the submarines that the Americans had, they had computers, like really simple computers. So you just put the targeting information in, like you just work out speed, range, and angle, and then you put that into the computer, and then it gives you like the gyroscope solution, and then you can just like, and the game like lets you can have that all done automatically for you, but I wanted to play it proper. Like this is the way that like the hardcore the community is like, no, you got to do it properly. You got to like work out your own torpedo solutions. So I'm there like using like a statometer. To like, you can measure the height of the ship by so let me explain. You see a ship out in the ocean, you're in your little U-boat, you're pedaling around like Britain, because we're trying to stop Britain from getting supplies. That's the whole job.
Yeah.
Sink shipping to Britain is the mission.
Yeah.
You see a boat in the distance, you're like, okay, shit. So you're like periscope, you go down to periscope depth, because usually you're on the surface.
Yeah.
And you only go to periscope, you only go submerged when you need to.
Yeah.
Then you go try and creep up close to it and like identify it. And if it's like an allied ship, like, you know, you're on and cracking, you know, and then you try and look up like what kind of ship it is in your little book. It's got like a book, and you look up, okay, what kind of ship it is. And then once you figured out, oh, it's this particular freighter, you know, like the height of the mast is this high, right? And then from, because you know how high the mast is, you can like work out with this like statometer, the angle from you to the top of the mast, and that tells you how far away the ship is. You can work out the range.
Oh, okay.
It's like triangulating.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's the range, and then you like use your stopwatch to work out like how fast it's going.
This is hardcore.
You got this little stopwatch with like a little swastika in the middle, because everything's like Nazi branded, because it's World War II, you know? Like everything on the boat is like,
I'd be very
brought to you by the National Socialist Party of Germany.
I'd be very uncomfortable playing this game,
it's bad. And then so you figure out how fast it's going, right? And then you kind of guess the angle based on, like, looking at the ship, and you kind of go, oh, you know, it's probably 45 degrees or something. And then you punch that into the computer, and then it gives you, like, a solution. And then, like, you basically wait till the gyroscope angle is, like, as low as it can be, because you don't want the torpedo to move. You want it to, even though they can turn, you don't really want them to turn too much. You kind of want, like, a nice straight shot, you know? Yeah.
You don't want to get too fancy.
And if everything works out, then you launch the torpedo, and then you have to wait like maybe 30 seconds up to a minute, or maybe 2 minutes, depending how far away the target is. And if you're lucky and everything works out and the torpedoes don't like, you know, run deep or like detonate prematurely, there's all these issues with them. But like ideally, you know, after like the stopwatch hits the little predetermined, like that's when the torpedo should hit, then you'll hear a big explosion. Or if you're looking through the periscope, you'll see the big
Cool
explosions. It's very satisfying. All that work is means that when you actually do hit something, it feels really, really good. You know, like, because it's, you really worked for it.
Yeah.
But
maths is involved, so.
Some of my adventures, just really quickly, were like, it's pretty funny. So I started the game in like a little Type 2 submarine that's like basically a training sub, because the Germans didn't have very good navy at the start of World War II. Like, Hitler basically started the war early. Like, they were building up their navy. They weren't really ready for the war when it started. So they only had like shitty little training submarines for the most part to start with. So I'm out like in the North Sea, like around Britain, in my little training sub. And for like two whole patrols, I just didn't see anything. And it was really quite frustrating because I got so excited. Like, I finished my training. I'd spent like literally a week of like in real time, like just practicing the game, and then finally started playing it for real. In 1939, like, you can pick which year to start, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Two patrols, like, nothing. And I was so frustrated, like, it was so boring, because I'd spent, like literally nights of my life not finding any shipping. So I was like, fuck this, we're going to, like, go somewhere where I know there'll be ships, which was, like, the British naval base at Scapa Flow up in the north of Scotland. So I like, drove my little submarine, like, up to, like, Scapa Flow. Realized this was quite a bad idea for a couple of reasons. So, pretty quickly, like, number one, I saw a ship. I was like, oh, cool. Great. Like, you know, really excited. Great, I can finally sink something. Like, very exciting moment to finally see a ship. Dive to periscope depth. Oh, it's a warship. Okay, cool. That's exciting. We can shoot a warship. That'd be really amazing first kill.
Feather in your
cap. It's a destroyer. Okay, cool. Yeah. Like, well, if you don't know the history of World War II, destroyers were equipped to be anti-submarine.
Yeah.
That was their whole... Well, a lot of destroyers were equipped with anti-submarine warfare technology. So this thing was coming right towards me, which I realized pretty soon. I was like, oh, it's heading... right towards me. That's interesting.
Zero, zero, zero by zero.
They have radar.
Yeah.
So it knew where I was. And even though I dived, it had seen me. And then it starts depth charging my location. Problem, the North Sea around England to the east is very shallow. So I only had about 30 meters to play with, which is not a lot when you're a big U-boat. So I'm down to like 20 meters depth. This thing is depth charging me. I'm freaking out. I tried to dive lower. And crashed my U-boat on the bottom of the North Sea and sank my U-boat. So that was my first little time out there. Oh, before then, that was the second time out. Okay, after that, I started a new game with like a larger U-boat. And first patrol was pretty uneventful. We went all the way around England to like around Ireland. To like intercept shipping from America. Didn't find anything. Came back around, heading home, very disappointed. On the way back, we saw a little freighter. And I was like, oh, awesome. So we sank that. And then like a little bit further on, I saw another freighter. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, this is awesome. This is working out really well. Set up to like, you know, torpedo it. Perfect little trajectory. I think I shot it with like the stern torpedo. You got like a torpedo tube in the rear of your submarine. So like I happened to not be able to shoot it with the front, but I managed to line up and shoot it from behind. And it was a long shot and I wasn't sure I was going to hit it. Got it. Like, hooray. You know, like your crew cheers when you hit a submarine with a torpedo. You can hear everyone cheering in German and stuff. And then I thought, I'll have a look and see what kind of ship it is. And like in the external camera, went and looked, and it was a Norwegian ship. So I just sank a neutral vessel.
Oh, yeah, that's should have looked that up in the book beforehand.
Like, yahoy, because we do go to war with Norway
eventually,
but not in February 1940.
No,
so that was a bit of an international incident that got us there. but where I'm up to now is actually really exciting because
the Fuhrer is very angry at Captain Robbie.
But it's so funny. It's just like mortifying, honestly. Where I'm up to now is like the invasion of Norway. So it's pretty cool because the game, I think with the mods and everything, like models a lot of the real life action that happened in the war, like in terms of the Navy. So the invasion of Norway was interesting because the German fleet had to come out of the Baltic Sea and up the coast of Norway where they're very exposed to the British because like Britain's like right there.
Yeah.
And the British fleet is the most powerful fleet in the world, like by far.
Yeah.
And the Germans really didn't have much to compete with, but they sent like ships up out of the Baltic and up the coast of Norway to like take ports along the Norwegian coast, and it was a pretty close run thing. The only thing that they were lucky because the British miscalculated and thought that the Germans were heading out into the Atlantic, so they went north into the west to try and intercept the Germans. They didn't realize the Germans were like attacking Norway. So I like made sure that my next patrol would be during the Norwegian campaign, and I went out and like I've been patrolling like the coast of Norway, like Trondheim, and then up to Narvik because there was a big battle at Narvik. But what was really cool was like on the way up to Narvik, I let my submarine left a few days before the main force, because like in real life the submarine sent out like 3 or 4 days before the main surface fleet, because submarines are really, really slow compared to like destroyers and actual battleships that can move like twice as fast on the surface, you know. So I'm just making my way up there, and it's pretty close to the day where the fighting would start, where Germany would officially declare war on Norway and invade the country. And I'm just tootling along to the northwest, along the coast. And then from to the south, I see like all these ships, and my guys are like spotting all these ships on the horizon. And I look down, and there's like 10 warships on the horizon to the south. And I'm like, well, if this game's any good, that's going to be the force, the German surface force that's going to attack Narvik. And it is. It's like there were 10 destroyers, and in real life, there were 10 destroyers that were sent up, and each one had like troops loaded onto it. And what they did was they just drove straight into Narvik, past the naval, like the batteries that were there, and just like took the town. But then what happened was the British turned up, and Narvik's like right at the end of a fjord, so there's a long like sort of like river basically that you have to go down to get to the city, and there's 10 German destroyers there. The British turned up and basically locked them in and like besieged them in Narvik. So that's where I'm at right now, is like I'm patrolling the mouth of the fjord, like waiting for the British to arrive. And I'm excited to see how it goes, because in real life, yeah, there was a pretty big naval battle, and hopefully I can get a couple of pot shots off at like some British warships while I'm there.
So, What is there an end game to this,
is it pretty open,
ongoing forever, or is there like you get to 1945 and then?
Yeah, the game ends at 1945 at the day that the surrender. Mm. So, no matter what happens, that's when the game ends. You can start at any year, and you can pick which flotilla, like U-boat flotilla, to be a part of.
Mm.
I chose to start at the start of the war because, like, long story short, like, the U-boats have a lot of success early in the war, but gradually the war turns against them, and by the end of the war, being in a U-boat is basically like a death sentence. And the game, like, kind of, especially with the mods, which are made by enthusiasts who are super into realism and stuff, like, makes that really, really, really hard. So by the end of 1943, 1944, it's actually, like, really a difficult game to play, or, like, unplayable, because you just get sunk the moment you leave.
It's survival more than anything else.
So it's trying to get to the end of the war and survive is probably the goal. But mm-hmm. I'm just excited to get a few. If I can sink a few thousand tons of British shipping before I get killed, I'll be happy. Because most of the U-boats were sunk. There's some like really horrific, like 75-80% of U-boat crews died.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
No.
But I mean, they were doing something really objectively horrific as well. So it's a weird game, because like it's kind of like I'm doing horrible acts, you know. I'm sinking merchant shipping, which is like it's ostensibly like innocent people.
Yeah.
You know. They're not part of the Navy or anything like that. Sending them to the bottom, and like without warning, and like the orders from the German command were don't rescue people, you know, like,
yeah.
So it was pretty brutal, and like the commander of the U-boats was actually charged with war crimes for that order, for the order to not rescue sailors.
Yeah, because it contravenes
the laws of war. The rules of war is that you're supposed to, if it's a warship, go nuts, but if it's a merchant ship, you're supposed to like stop the ship. And like, I am, attention ship, I am from the German Empire, you know, whatever, like, get off the boat or I'll sink, you know. And then they're supposed to all get off into light boats, and you're supposed to help them and stuff. But practically that wasn't a good idea, because they would radio.
Yeah, they'd
be like, hey, there's a German U-boat here, you know. So it was risky, you know, for the crews, and there's a bunch of other reasons too. But it's a weird thing to be playing a game where you're like, huh, this is like really questionable morally what I'm doing.
Yeah, and this is the best of the series.
But like, fuck, it's a really immersive game. Like the sounds of the boat, like when you're
deep underwater, and you can hear the metal like creaking and stuff like that. And like I said, so that all the voices are in German, you know. So like,
is there subtitles?
Or? Yeah, the subtitles are in English, and all the you can go really hard and put everything in German if you want. But like, I just put like the voices, they speak in German, but like the writing on like the machinery and stuff is English, so I can understand. Like,
okay, yeah, that makes sense.
This is the gyroscope or whatever. Like, yeah. I'm not setting the wrong thing, but yeah, it's a fucking cool game. And it's just wild how huge it is. Like, I'm up in the middle of Norway, but you can go all the way down to the Caribbean. You can. They've even mapped like Australia and shit.
Is it real time? Like, does it take you like a week to get to?
Yeah, it's real time, but you can speed up the time.
Oh, okay.
So there's like time compression.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you want, and some people are really hardcore. I've heard stories of people playing the whole game in like just in real time, and like just taking a month out of your life to like just play this game, like, which sounds insane to me, but you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are hardcore kind of Sims for a lot of people, I guess.
It's a dad game. It's a hardcore Sim. Like, the people on the forums are like in their 50s and 60s and stuff, and they're like
war enthusiasts.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, I'm worried that there's a crossover with like people who are like kind of into the Nazis in a way that's not cool.
Yeah,
but like most people playing the game just seem to be like history nerds, history buffs, essentially. Yeah. Yeah, like myself.
That sounds pretty cool.
It is a lot of fun, and like I've sank a few ships now, like that weren't Norwegian, you know, like and it's a really cool feeling, and I feel confident now that I can sink things. So like just before I came over, I was patrolling in that fjord, and there were a few Nazi ships coming and going, and like you don't know that they're an enemy ship till you're pretty close. So I was like setting up for a torpedo attack just in case. So you have to kind of, I'm getting really good now at getting ahead of their, you plot their course, you know, then you try and get ahead of them, and you want to be ahead of their course and about 45 degrees to the right or left of their course, so that you're ready in an ambush position to like shoot a torpedo right at their flank. And I've gotten very good at like setting myself up that way.
Can you just go to the torpedo room and just, rather than doing all these calculations, just go fucking fire now. I'll take my chances. I don't like math.
You can wing it. Yeah, if you get close enough, you can literally just be like, it's roughly in front of me, aim your periscope, and just kind of go, you know, and you'll hit it. And like that's they actually encourage you to get within a kilometer of the ships, because even if you fuck up your solution, you can still
get away
to hit. Yeah. And that, you know, there's other stuff too, like the game models or like the issues with the torpedoes, like the Germans had problems with the magnetic detonator on the torpedo, so it was supposed to explode. You shoot them like about a meter under the ship, and it's supposed to explode when it's right under the middle of the ship and break the ship's back. And like one torpedo can sink like an aircraft carrier in theory if you do it right. But the problem is that if the magnetic exploder doesn't actually work, then like you just keep missing, and
or you just hear a dull.
Yeah. Sometimes they were just literally like, the other problem was, if you didn't hit the ship, the impact detonator wouldn't go off if it wasn't like close to 90 degrees. So if you hit them like at like a 70 degree angle, it won't go off. Another reason to really get up close and be like right there. But the problem is compounded because you go back home and you say, well, the torpedoes are broken, and your commanding officer goes, yeah, but maybe you're just a shit shot. Like maybe you fucked up the...
Yeah, of course.
Like, it took a long time for them to realize that to believe the crews that were saying like the torpedoes aren't working. And the same problem with the Americans, but it was way worse. Funnily enough, the Germans figured out the problem earlier. The Americans had pretty much the exact same problem with their torpedoes in World War II, but it took them about 2 or 3 years to fix it.
Jeez.
So they just weren't listening to the crews at all. And
it's kind of funny because you're effectively like, you're kind of setting yourself up as a sniper, except you're using a fucking torpedo.
Right. You're trying to crash a little boat full of dynamite into another boat, basically. Like, you're trying to... So
you kind of got your finger on the trigger, now...
Yeah.
But, it's an underwater, you know, charged torpedo.
And then there's the whole, like, issue of trying to escape, and, like, the science war that was going on that the game mimics, like... So, you know, the British have radar, and how I got caught out by that. Mm. Like, by not realizing that destroyer knew where I was probably 20 kilometers away, like, before I could even see it, it knew exactly where I was. It was coming right for me. You can get, like, radar detectors that, like, later in the war, the Germans developed them, and it's basically just, like, a little thing, and they had to rotate it manually with a little crank. But when there's radar, it'll set off, and you'll know that someone's pinging you with radar. And then there was this whole back and forth where, like, the Allies had to invent a new radar that, like, that thing couldn't detect. And, like, the science war back and forth, like, the one-upping...
Yeah, the technology one-upping
shit. Yeah, and it's all there in the game. Yeah, you can get radar, you can get sonar, so you can, like, ping and see how far away something is using sonar and stuff like that. It's got hydrophones, so you can listen for ships. You can be underwater and not be able to see things, but you can listen. And you know, like, oh, there's a ship, like, bearing 300... And you can tell from the sound, like, it's far away or close. And
that's cool.
The game, like, mirrors all of that. It's a very, very, very cool game. And for $1, I feel like I definitely got my money's worth, you know? So, I'm going to play a lot more of that. I can see myself obsessing over this game for a few more months.
Yeah, it's definitely a Rob game.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I'm still, like, it still feels like amateur hour a little bit. Because I'm, you know, obviously still sinking Norwegians and fucking, you know, shit like that, crashing my boat. But I'm getting better and better. So, Hopefully, next time I report back, there'll be more war stories and
this, things. This sounds like the kind of game that we could review, but I'm not going to learn those systems. So I'll stand behind you and I'll give you orders on what to do.
Oh, God.
Which is how, like...
Ramming speed!
Once again, ramming a destroyer that has, like, three, like, pure steel hulls. You're just going to hear a dunk.
Yeah. No, that will ram you.
What was that? Oh.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so listeners, every time we actually review what is known as a Rob game,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, what was that
one? Crusader Kings,
we did that. I am not going to sit down and learn a whole bunch of systems and memorize a whole bunch of new kings. So basically, I stand behind Rob and bark orders at him, and he does what I tell him to do. And this actually works out quite well, because Rob knows the systems, I know what I want to do, and, you know, because we have a very limited time to ever do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind reviewing this game, but you can be the helmsman, and I'll be the captain.
Oh, God. We're in trouble.
And get me some Norwegians.
Straight to New York City.
So, can you get to Australia?
You can. So, yeah. So, there is a... You can go down to Australia, and they developed, like, special campaign files so that you can play as one of the few U-boats that was actually stationed in, like Java kind of area. Oh, yeah. And yeah, the game's weird, man. I was reading about, like, there was this commando raid. I don't know if you heard about this, where the Australians went on this little, like, fishing boat and, like, planted, like, mine, like explosives on Japanese shipping in, like, a port, like, Singapore or something like that. And they went up in this little, like, I'm getting it all wrong, all the facts wrong, but they went up in, like, a disguised, like, Asian fishing boat thing.
Yeah, trawler.
And the game models that. So if you just happen to be in the area, you might encounter a little fishing boat going up. Like, what? Like, the game mirror, like, models that level of detail of, like, all the different, like, actions that were happening and stuff. Like,
there was only ever one successful attack on a submarine attack on an Australian city.
There's the mini subs,
yeah,
right?
The Japanese micro subs.
Yeah.
Which basically, like, they were so small that it had two people lying down, and it was basically a suicide mission.
Yeah.
And they sank a ferry carrying people, and then we destroyed them. Mm-hmm. They're actually on display at the Australian War Memorial. Fascinating devices.
Yeah.
They were not coming out of that tin can, that's for sure.
I mean, they might have said, there might be some... They might have said something like, oh, yeah, and we'll get you... We can probably rescue you. Like, you know, getting into that thing, you're not coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have to admire the bravery in some ways of people doing that.
Yeah, and they were given honours, and they were sent back. Like, the bodies were repatriated to Japan.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. I've become, like, a weird... I've gone down this massive rabbit hole of, like, World War II naval stuff, which is never, like, something I've been super into, but... My brain is, like, full of facts about U-boats and, like, radar and sonar and stuff now, just because you have to learn it to play the game. And I also just, I don't know, I've always been a bit of a World War II nerd. Blame my father.
Yeah.
It's like my upbringing. It's like my childhood was, like, reading books about World War II, because I'm not warped or anything, am I?
Yeah. I'll take that question under advisement.
Anyway, so it's been fun to talk about that, because I've been obsessing over that game, and I haven't really... talked about it much, but it's like literally all I think about at the moment.
So what's been going on in your life?
Life-wise, it's been pretty crazy. We moved house recently, so we moved into a new place, not by choice. We had to leave because the owner of the old place, you know, wanted to move in or whatever excuse they use.
They wanted to sell it. The market's very hot in Canberra at the moment, so
it wouldn't surprise me. So we're we actually moved into my wife's parents' investment property. So it's a smaller place. It's a little bit cozy, like a bit less privacy, you know. Like all the bedrooms are all clustered together at the end of the house, so it's like it's you're a little living on top of each other. But it's enabling us to save money and continue saving money at the rate that we were at the old house. So hopefully we'll be able to continue building up our savings to get a deposit. And if the market doesn't
explode,
go too crazy, like, you know, we just... The problem is the goalposts keep shifting. It's so difficult to save for a deposit because you feel like... It just feels like, A, it's difficult to get the money because the amount you need keeps getting bigger. But also, B, like... Buying a house for $1 million seems like a really bad move. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like when they were half as much, it seemed like a bad move already.
And like the place that we moved into, like when we bought it, we were like going, oh my God, this is so much money. Are we ever going to, like, you know, can we pay this off? And we were panicking. And now the house has not quite, but almost doubled in value.
It's crazy, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. It's just...
Like, you should not pay that amount of money for this house. It's a great house. Don't get me wrong. I love this house, but it, you know, what it would be going for now is just crazy.
You bought in, like, what, 2015 or 2016?
2015,
yeah. Yeah, see, it's like, in eight years since then, it's doubled. The prices have probably pretty much doubled. That's crazy. So, you know, but we're trying... Anyway, point of the matter is, we moved, we're trying to save a bit of money. So, like, even though it is a bit of a smaller place and, like, not ideal, it's fine. It's livable, you know? And, and we can save. And we're very grateful to Joe's parents for letting us stay there. But, yeah, it's quite cozy.
Yeah. So, and the problem is that when you finally do manage to get the deposit... For a house, that's my budget in the background. You might not be able to get like a big place that you were renting before.
That's what upsets me is the thought that we'll buy a place, but it'll be like a it'll be like the same as what we're in now, like a tiny 3-bedroom place. We're all living on top of each other and live there forever. Because it's just, that's all you can afford. But, you know, like at the same time as I complain about this, these are all good problems to have. Like, I'm not at the bottom of the pile. I'm not living in a car. I'm not living paycheck to paycheck. Just having the privilege of even saving a deposit, you know?
Yeah. Like being able to actually have some money.
Yeah. Because, like, I'm not a fancy guy. I mean, for many years of my life, probably most of my life, I lived paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And it's only really in the last 10 years, even less, probably 6 years, really, that I've been able to start saving money. So I don't take it for granted at all. And like while I am complaining about how difficult it is to buy a house, I want to just remember for a moment that, like, you know,
you don't have it that bad.
The fact that it's even a possibility for me at all is pretty cool and like a bit of a privilege. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite, gotta count my blessings. Yeah, and the problem is that even once you can, I don't want to freak you out, but after you get, after you actually buy a house, the interest rates at the moment just keep climbing. The interest rates
suck. Is that another reason why I don't want to buy one right now?
Yeah,
because it's kind of like, I don't want to buy in this climate.
No, you don't.
Like, I kind of want to wait a few years and like hopefully it'll calm down a bit. You know?
I mean, it's terrible to say, but you kind of hope the housing market crashes at some point.
Well, this is the thing. I feel bad for people like yourself. Well, I feel even badder for people who bought after you, like,
yeah, during the, like, pandemic.
Some of Joe's friends who bought places for like $900,000, you know, and if the market crashes, that's great for me. It's not good for them.
No.
So I don't know. I don't know what I want.
So Canberra's a bit weird because like Canberra is not immune, but the housing market works differently here because we're a public service town. Yeah. So everyone like kind of has like an above average kind of salary compared to the rest of Australia, and very kind of stable jobs and stuff like that. So even when the housing market does crash in other areas of Australia, in Canberra, it just kind of stagnates for a while more than anything else. It might dip for a bit. But, you know, they can't build houses in Canberra quick enough to keep up with demand. And, you know, the suburbs are always growing and stuff like that. And I think we're heading towards 500,000 people. Like, you know, we're not a big city, but we only have a select amount of land in the ACT. We'd have to extend our borders. And a lot of that is national park, which you can't, you know, like you can't really build on Titbinbilla.
Much as you might like
where the honeysuckle tracking station is. Jesus. Is there anything else going on in your life at the moment?
Let me think. Well, there's like the usual sort of like stuff with our fertility and things. It's like an ongoing saga. We're both really busy outside of work. Like I'm preparing all this stuff for my astrology stuff. That's just constantly busy with that. Joe's busy with uni. But we're kind of like, it's kind of an intense patch. And that might explain why I'm like just hyper fixating on a video game right now. Because it's a good escape from like just how like
being busy a Nazi in World War II certainly helped you escape.
Oh boy, it's a good escapism, man. Oh, yikes.
When you say it like that, it sounds bad.
Man. Yeah, it's a fucking weird thing. It's a fucking weird game, but like it is cool. It is like, it's very cool how like complex the sim is and everything. And it is like a nice. Yeah, it is good to be able to like switch off at the end of the night, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of the things about video games, maybe this is something that we talk about sometimes on this podcast, is like when the life stuff is hard, then the gaming can like counteract that a bit, you know, or like help. So
kind of shift your brain a little bit.
Yeah, like there is a positive to gaming, I think. People talk about how negative game, like, oh, games make you violent or something. Oh, your kid's gonna grow up to want to be in the Nazi submarine or something, you know, all this fear mongering. But like,
when I grow up, I'm going to be a Nazi submarine commander. Okay, several problems with that, kid. Several problems. But you do you.
But yeah, like there is positives, and I think like being like a healthy thing that you can turn to like, like distract you in a positive way from things that are going on and it might be like unpleasant, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a bit, you know, like I said, I'm not that unfortunate. The things that I'm dealing with are all manageable.
All kind of first worldy kind of problems.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, so yeah, I'm okay. How about you, AC? What have you been up to? Gaming. Let's start with games as well.
Okay, sure. Gaming wise, I always kind of come into these things and go, "Oh man, I haven't been gaming much." And the truth is that I actually have been gaming. I have a terrible memory. My memory really is bad. But I have... I do a lot of kind of passive gaming, occasional gaming. I don't play retro games as much as I used to. I still play them. And they're mostly handhelds. Like, you know, I'll always dip back into the Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance library. And I just, you know, I'll just play those and just kind of dip in and out of those. It's kind of weird because I don't really consider it like, I just don't go in there and expecting to complete a game. I just go in there wanting to have fun and just play something, even if it's just like a distraction or, oh yeah, I remember this game being quite good. I'm going to tool around with it. And I don't have a completion complex like a lot of people do. But that being said, the game I have been sinking all of my hours into at the moment is, of course, Zelda, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Of course.
So that has come out.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a pretty big deal. Yeah. It's a pretty big fucking game.
Yeah, is it like, is it a comparable size to Breath of the Wild sort of thing?
I'd say it's twice as big. Three times as big?
Whoa, yeah.
And not, probably not actually three times as big. Probably about twice as big. And the reason for that, there's a good reason. So, although it's set in the same area, like Hyrule and the, you know, the other surrounding kind of, you know, Gudon or Gugon or whatever they're called, kingdoms and townships and whatnot, basically the animation style, kind of the cell animated look, it's completely the same. And the although it's not the same map, a lot of the areas kind of look similar, but because of what happened, the calamity that happened kind of changed the topography a bit. So things are kind of vaguely where they used to be or shifted a bit. It's kind of like they turned the map kind of 45 degrees on its side. Huh. And it's interesting because... like, you know, the story of the game, you kind of actually start in the sky. So there's like a sky levels, and they're not as big as the ground levels, but, you know, there's just kind of bits in the air that just kind of float there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's the bit on the ground where the topography is similar but changed from the original one. And then there is the underground bit, which I think is not as big as the above ground, but close enough.
Yeah, cool.
And you can kind of transverse that way. The powers that you get this time are very interesting. You can kind of... One of the powers is being able to kind of go through solid objects from underneath, like the ground. You need to be kind of close enough to a ledge or to...
And you can just pop right...
Just kind of pop right out. So if you go down a well and you're exploring and you think, oh, shit, how do I get out of here? Then you activate this power. If it's green just above you, it means you can go through it. You just kind of go wah, 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 and then pop out the top.
So great way. So that facilitates going into the underground section, but not getting stuck there too much.
Yeah, basically, like you could get down there. You can only go. It's only one way. You can only go up.
Yeah.
Basically, that's how you get out. I am enjoying it. I am taking it very slowly. It's very, very slow, and the reason for that is that I'm not playing a whole lot of other games at the moment. Currently, you kind of actually get members of parties. But kind of, they're basically just extra powers that you can activate, and they kind of hang around. They don't talk to you or anything like that after you've kind of activated them. They're based off other characters you meet on the way. It gets a bit crowded sometimes. The Switch is fucking chugging doing this. It's
pushing,
a trooper.
Pushing the Switch to its limit.
Yeah, I mean, even Breath of the Wild was kind of pushing it.
Yeah, you
can
hear the fans spin up playing that game. Yeah.
It's chugging. It's real chugging. But
cook an egg on the...
but it's handling it. It's not handling it any... Sometimes you don't get over 10 frames a second, but...
Wow.
But that's okay. I'm not going to the Switch to get, mind-blowing, performance.
No,
I'm going there for good games. and I've defeated two or three bosses so far. I'm just in the middle of a boss fight now, which is... I hate boss fights. I know exactly what I need to do. Unfortunately, I don't have the patience sometimes to sit there and go through all that shit. Because when I played Breath of the Wild, the first time, Maria and May were still in Japan.
Right.
And they were looking, she was looking after her very sick mother who eventually passed away. And that was a good distraction. This time, Maria and May are here, and I would rather spend time with them than necessarily play the game. So that's why it's such a slow slog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like you kind of need to be a childless youth to really dig into these sorts
of games. Yeah, and it's a deep game. Like, there's a lot of systems, a lot of ways you can solve puzzles, a lot of ways you can play the game because it's so massive that some people just want to explore.
Yeah.
I do want to finish the game eventually, or at least not completely, just kill the Demon King. There's time travel shenanigans with Zelda and stuff like that. And I am looking forward to continue playing it. I keep getting into boss battles and then just kind of going, I'll come back to it later when I feel like it.
Yeah. Sometimes there's a feeling of like...
There's no difficulty settings either.
Like, at certain phases in your life, a huge game can feel exciting.
Yeah.
Or daunting, and if you're in that latter category, it's it's like when I was playing Red Dead and I was like, this is really freaking cool, but I don't think I have time to do all these things. I want to do all these things, but I just don't think I can. And it's frustrating because you just end up wishing you had more time for this game kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And It's living in my Switch at the moment. That is the Switch game.
That's the game you're playing. Yeah. Right now. Yeah.
And it just kind of lives in there. And I look, as I said, I'm just going to keep plugging away at it. One of the best things about that game is just exploring. Like, and there are like, there's like building, crafting mechanic.
Mm.
I'm not the biggest fan of doing that shit, honestly, to be completely fair.
Right. Yeah.
So I just kind of run around rather than build like a simple car to drive around.
Oh, you can build. Wait, what? I've done no research of this game. Like,
so yeah. So yeah, one of the things is you can kind of like, it's called Ultra Hand.
Okay.
Which means you can kind of levitate objects and turn them around in like three-dimensional space. Fun. And stick wheels to them.
It's like Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, but Zelda.
Kind of, yeah, actually. It's kind of like that.
Make like a weird car with six wheels. And
you can build kind of whatever fucking works. Some people have built like giant robots with dicks that shoot fire.
So it's got Minecraft vibes.
It kind of does. It's not that
giant
complex
robot with dicks that shoot fire. Definitely.
There's a video which, okay, it's very, very
there
funny.
There was a podcast I listened to once, which will remain nameless, Podtoid, where it's Podtoid, that's right. Where a guy made a fan of the show made a giant statue of one of the hosts of the show in Minecraft, complete with like a big anus open with like a river of poo coming out of the butt.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. You want to eat.
So yeah, you can do a lot of creative things.
Yeah. And it only took people like a few days to come up with the giant dick robot, of course. Yeah, because exactly. That's exactly what you're going to do. Long,
let's make Goatsy with this.
Yeah. Oh,
God, the internet.
Yes, the internet.
The internet must internet.
And look, as I said, I love it. I love exploring. I just need to get over certain humps in there. I sometimes wish, like, And when I'm a friend of the show, E-Man, who comes over every couple of weeks, actually did help me beat one of the bosses, because I was just looking at it the wrong way. And one of the things that I do in this game is that I do things in the, like, I try and do things the way the game wants me to do it, because I want it to be linear.
But
I have no sense of direction in real life and in video games. So they're like saying, go this way. And I go the completely opposite direction and go, holy shit, there's like a massive monster here made of rock, and bam, I'm dead.
You run into those like those creatures that are like there to telegraph to you, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah, I can do this, and it turns out I fucking can't. So it's look, a lot of what I run into is not because I think I'm hardcore, it's just because I have no sense of direction. Poor AC. I have been playing a bit of Mario Kart 8 as well, because they have additional tracks in the DLC. Mm-hmm. They're really good.
Yeah, I need to get those. You've been telling me that they're really good. I've been meaning to invest in them. Yeah.
The games, like, there's a Kyoto level, like a Kyoto track, and like an Australia track, and I think the latest one is like a Vancouver track. And like they're clever and very kind of referential to the cities that they're in or the countries that they're based in.
Mm.
But it just kind of screams to me that the developers wanted just to travel and go to these countries like as an excuse to take photos for ideas for tracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't say I blame them.
Let's do a 5-star hotel level.
Yeah. You, like Nintendo is richer than God. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
Of course they should be able to do that. I also played, in terms of the Switch, I had COVID, which really fucking sucked.
You played I Had COVID, the video game.
Yeah, basically. When I had COVID, Maria and May bought me Kirby Return to Dream Land Deluxe.
Oh, nice.
Which was it's a really good game. I really enjoy that game. It's a 2D platformer sort of deal. And like with most Kirby games, you kind of float along. It's, you know, there are challenging bits, but it's, you know, you end up fighting God at the end. Like, you know, the demoned hell king of,
it's
like,
so
Satan of the universe. It's
those
like
games really escalate.
Yeah, they really do. It's like, there's this, like this guy you're trying to help out, and spoilers, it turns out he was bad and wanted the ultimate power in the universe, and then you have to kill him. So
it's high stakes for a little pink cloud just wants to eat people.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun. I got up to the very last boss.
Hmm.
And then I lost, I got halfway through the fight and I kept losing. And then after that, Tears of the Kingdom came out, and I just took it out and haven't played it since. I'm not sure I'm actually ever going to finish it.
Yeah.
Because I played it.
You played it. Like, yeah. Sometimes you can feel okay with that. You're like, look, I got stuck at this bit, but I played a lot of this game. I know what the game's like. I experienced the things that people rave about the game. I'm good.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about, like, what's that little game where you're a little fox exploring a little Zelda-y world?
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
That one.
Yeah.
Tunic. I'm like, I'm never going to go back to you.
Yeah. Look, you have fun, and that's what games are for.
Yeah, and I experience the stuff that makes you go,
play the game
damn.
The way you want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
If someone goes, oh, you didn't really play the game because you didn't finish it. Mm. It's like, well, you're a fucking nut job, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, I have limited time, limited resources, and if I am not enjoying something, I'm not going to throw my whole entire existence behind it so I can tell people on a podcast, oh, I finished this game. It's like, no, I play games for fun. And even then, like, I have very limited time to do that.
That's the thing, is I love games that are full of secrets and full of, like, crazy stuff.
Mm.
But, like, at the same time, there's just only so much. Like I had this love affair with La Mulana. You know that game, La Mulana? It's, like, one of the most, like, secret-filled, difficult games. Like, it's a platformer, but it's just full of, like, crazy secrets and stuff.
I
and,
have
like,
heard of that.
Like, I got obsessed with that game. And, but, like, this is the problem, is those kind of games intrigue me. I love the idea of, like, a game that's just full of crazy secrets and full of stuff to find and explore and, like, difficulty through the roof and, like, bragging rights, etc. But, like, at the end of the day, like
Fez.
It's, yeah, or, like, Dark Souls is kind of like that a bit. I would say La Mulana is way more crazy than Dark Souls. Way more crazy. But that same feeling of, like, bragging rights when you beat it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I usually just don't have... I have to be in a really particular mental place and the very particular circumstances of my life to, like, I beat Dark Souls when Ruby was a newborn and I was, like, I had all this time to myself and I was sleeping weird hours and I was, like, in a weird, like, mental zone, you know?
Yeah, you always are.
And, like, when I wasn't sleeping or dealing with the baby, I was playing Dark Souls because that was my, like, way of coping with, like, the craziness of that situation. I wouldn't play Dark Souls for fun on, like, a weekend or, like, after work on a, you know, oh, finish my 9-to-5, time to relax.
Yeah.
And play this really annoying hard game. I don't know. I think it's some games are just for certain people in certain parts of their life, and it's okay to be like, it's not for me right now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And just like Breath of the Wild was for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect
for you at that time.
At that time.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look, I've only finished, I've finished the first Zelda.
Mm.
I have finished Link's Awakening
mm-hmm.
several times. That's the one game that I've played several times.
That's it. It's such a good one. Yeah.
And Breath of the Wild, I think they're the... I've played other Zelda games, but I haven't finished them.
Mm.
And they're the ones
Link
that I have.
Link to the Past? No?
I have tried on several occasions to play Link to the Past. I get to the main kind of area, and then I kind of don't know what to do next, and I kind of give up.
That overwhelm feeling,
I know I should... I know it's a good game. I know it's one of the best. I know I should plug away at it, but, you know, just time.
Again, it's just that...
Time is an issue with me.
As I said to Ruby the other day, I was like, when you're a teenager, you have to play as many video games as you can. Because you're never going to get that time. Like, you'll never be able to dedicate as much time to just 100% completing stupid games. You know?
Very true. Other than that, I did get a new Atari 2600.
Oh, really? Because... So you haven't had a good one for like a while, right?
My problem is that I had a 7800, which is backwards compatible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the AC adapter died, so I haven't been able to play that ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to, I found one at the Green Shed, which is like adjacent to the dump, and it was still expensive, but it worked, and it came in its original box.
Oh wow, that's rare.
And it was a Vader, what we call in the 2600 community. So the first 2600 had like wood grain paneling, and a lot of people refer to them as woodies. The next variant was all black instead of wood paneling.
That's the one I think they had at the one I remember playing at primary school.
Yeah, and that is called people call that a Vader because it's from the 70s and it's all black. Then. In the mid to late 80s, they around the same time the 7800 was released, they released the Atari 2600 Junior.
Hmm.
Now, the Junior version is just like it's super compact. But I found this one, and it was modded for AV. So it's a very small console, but someone modded it for, instead of RF, like radio frequency, they put AV cables through it.
Yeah.
So, and I just wanted a 2600 that worked by this stage, because the old one, the Vader that I had, was working when I got it, and now it just doesn't seem to work. And I'm good at tuning televisions and stuff like that. I just can't seem to figure this one. Which is a bit of a shame.
One of my big regrets in life is that at some point in the 90s, I got gifted like a giant crate full of 2600 games and like an old 2600, and I didn't value it at all, and like we ended up giving it away or something.
Yeah, a lot of people did that.
Man, it was like a shitload of them, you know? Like a fucking grip of 2600 games, and like some had manuals and stuff, you know? And yeah.
2600 games are weird. Nobody, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, has a complete collection. Because there are some games that are just so fucking rare that were like, you know, like there's a Kool-Aid game that they gave away with like Kool-Aid, and they're so many games were destroyed because they were just didn't sell. You know, there was a glut in the market, and there's not, because it was the 70s and early 80s, there just wasn't a good enough kind of information network about even what a complete 2600 collection or, you know, game library would be. And with that, I found a game, which I'm pretty sure is an Aussie game. It was made by Australians for the 2600, called Sea Adventure. It's obviously a late Atari game, because it's pretty complex for complex when I say graphically, like, you know, it has different colors, it has different modes where you basically, you go down, you shoot sea creatures, you collect something, you come back up to the top, and you can actually tell what the graphics are, which you can't in a lot of 2600 games.
Less imagination required.
Yeah, so I got this game kind of on a whim when I bought the AV Famicom, for the AV 2600, and I don't think this game has been dumped. So, I don't know what the Atari collecting scene is really like, whether they really care about this stuff, but I kind of want to know how to dump a 2600 game so it can be preserved.
Yeah, right.
Even, I just don't know how to do it. I really need to look into it.
As
far as I know, there's no ROM out there, and I just want to, like, this obscure Aussie 2600 game, which I'm sure sold shit else. I want to make sure it's preserved.
Sure, someone put a lot of time and effort into that.
Yeah. And it's also the 40th anniversary of the Famicom.
Oh, no shit. Well, happy birthday, Famicom.
Yeah. I'd like to say that I spent an entire day playing Famicom games, but I was actually quite busy on the day that it was the 40th anniversary.
Celebrate.
No, I'm a really big fan of the Famicom. Like, I've got like an actual like display case full of like really interesting stuff in there.
It's
like
a fucking cool system, for sure. Yeah,
but I just don't have a lot of time to spend on it at the moment, unfortunately. In terms of my life, I turned 42. Let's say 22. we had a bit of a party you attended.
Yeah, that's right. That was fun. Yeah.
Bowling party, which was good.
And then we had a bowling party for your daughter as well.
Yeah.
For a theme.
Yeah, May really liked the bowling party we went to.
Yeah.
So she decided she wanted to do it as well.
That's cute. Yeah.
Which is funny because she can't actually see the pins at the other end. She just kind of rolls the ball down and hears noise, and then we tell her what happens. And it's really fascinating with blind kids sometimes about how sometimes you just don't know that they're sight impaired. But Maria and I are just so used to it that we just kind of explain everything to May. Like, we kind of do a running commentary for her sometimes. Yeah, like, there's a step here, there's this here. You know, look out for this, pull away, you know. And so I guess that's one of the, like, we're effectively seeing eye humans instead of seeing eye dogs for her sometimes. Yeah, we can just kind of explain the situation, and she still has a good time, which is a really positive thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I decided I'm not going to celebrate birthdays anymore. I'm 42. 42 is an important number for me because I'm a big Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan. So Maria got me like a big towel that says don't panic, and some patches, and it was a bit of a Hitchhiker's Guide sort of party. She made like cookies with, you know, dolphin shaped and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fun.
And it was really good, and I really appreciate the effort she put into it.
Yeah,
it was a really, really good birthday. But
it was fun, definitely.
Yeah, like 40, turning 40, big milestone. 41, nothing. 42, big important to me. Nothing is going to be important until I turn 50.
Yeah. They get less and less significant. These days, I just go out for dinner with my my family.
Yeah,
that's my party is at the moment.
That's all you can really do.
Just go to somewhere I like. Just have dumplings or something. Just an excuse for me to eat food that I like, basically. At this point,
yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, I don't. I usually do have a party every year for my birthday, but going forward, I don't think I'm going to do that. I might have people around for dinner or something like that, but yeah. I just don't want to make a big deal out of it anymore. I'm just over it.
That's fair. I've been like that for years.
Yeah. I think, just because I just wanted to reach 42, like as that important number for me, and now it's like, I really don't care. Unless I actually make it to 69, that's going to be a big one.
Oh,
lots of Bill and Ted references to that. I'm going back to Japan in December.
Yeah, of course. That's cool. Yeah, exciting.
I've got a few important things to do there. We're going to have a few guests join us at the farm. Misha, who works in the animation industry, is going to pop by.
Fun.
She's going to be in Japan for about a month or so.
Oh, nice.
And she's been there before, so she's had a really good time. And a friend of the show, Mr. Hicks, he's going to come.
Oh, that culprit.
Yeah, he was kind of like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't really have any plans to do anything with my life at the moment. I said, why don't you just come to Japan at the same time we're there? And he goes, okay. yeah, basically, very easy to convince him. And so he's going to stay at the farm as well. So cool. It's going to be pretty packed
around New Year's. Good to have some guests. And
yeah,
that's fun. All right, cool.
As I said, I caught COVID. That was terrible. The problem with me is that I'm not good at being sick. So a sick person has to lie down and get better. And I'm not good at doing that. I'm not good at, like, doing nothing. So basically, as soon as I was okay... enough to work from home. I just work from home. And
you don't have to milk a good illness.
And yeah, so I was just like working away, and then I realized that I wasn't really getting any better.
Yeah.
I kind of like got to a point where I was okay, but not great. And then I just kind of plateaued because I was like working and like, you know, doing stuff. And, you know, because my team where I work is rather small, so I didn't want to inconvenience them. And then I kind of got another bout of COVID the next week because I just didn't take the time to properly fucking heal myself, which is very frustrating when you're me. So I kind of got double COVID.
Oh, man, that's rough.
Which was just, it was really rough. Maria caught it as well, unfortunately.
Damn.
However, May did not.
Oh, nice. Well, that's good. How did she avoid that?
I have no fucking clue how she just didn't get COVID in a house
full
of COVID people. Like, Maria and I had it at the same time.
Actually, you know, Joe had COVID, actually, like, a few weeks ago, and I didn't get it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I did isolate for, like, I basically slept on the couch for a few nights.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
That's the excuse you use. I'm sure you were just kicked out.
Because of all the shit I do. No, like, she was really grumpy with me because I was like, I'm sleeping on the couch. I don't want to hug you. And she's like, no, you have to hug me. And I'm like, but I went to the hospital last time I had COVID.
Yeah, that wasn't great. I didn't need to go to the hospital. I just...
I'm definitely afraid of COVID now.
Like, yeah, COVID is serious business. Like, I was... fucking munted for a couple of weeks there, and I didn't have to be like that. It was just my own stupid arrogance of like, oh no, I need to go back to work, you know, I need to be a productive member of society. And it's like, no, you fucking moron, rest and recover.
Yeah,
and
like, I need to get into that. You gotta milk the illness.
I never do that. Like, whenever I'm sick, I'm like, I gotta get back to work immediately, because I'm the only person who kind of does my job.
It's tough when you know that you're the only one, and like, if you, whatever you don't do will just be waiting for you, and that is sucky. Like, it's easier to take a sick day when there's people to cover for you, for sure.
Yeah, I take a few sick days, but it's genuinely because I'm sick. And sometimes it turns into a bigger thing because I don't take the time to actually rest and heal properly. We took May last week to a play school concert. Play school, for those who aren't Aussie, is a very popular children's TV show. They read stories, they sing songs, they kind of, like, they do imaginary play activities and stuff like that. It's a staple of every Aussie kid's childhood.
Darn right it is.
Every single Aussie knows the theme to play school.
Mm-hmm.
And this does happen. You sometimes come across people in other countries who pretend to be Aussie.
Mm.
Like, you know, maybe they've seen fucking Crocodile Dundee one too many times. And
this is the test.
This is the test. Like, because I have run into people like this where it's obvious they're not Australian.
Yeah, there's a bear in there. And if they don't say Anna Cher as well.
Exactly.
Then you can shoot them because they're a robot.
That is the motherfucking thing.
Like, plus the Blade Runner test.
Yeah, that is actually it. Like, you can even just hum the tune and every Australian will know it.
Oh, that's funny.
Of any age, if you were born here, like, if you're naturalized, fine, that's, I get that you might not know that, but if you were born here, every fucking Australian knows what play school is. They know the tune and they can always sing the next line. And I have called out people because, like, it's weird. Australians overseas are kind of, like, seen as very cool. Like, we're very cool, kind of relaxed and, like, almost exotic for a white person, if you're white from Australia.
Exotic whites.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't understand Americans sometimes.
For a unique flavor of white, you know.
Yeah.
Like French vanilla.
Yeah. Oh, geez. When American meets a New Zealander, like, their fucking mind explodes.
Yeah.
Because they can't understand them. Yeah. Because, like, the New Zealand accents are so thick. Like, so thick that they can't understand. Let's go down for some fish and chops. And, like, the Americans go, what the fuck are you talking? Talk English. And this has actually happened when I was working in Nova.
It's funny.
And speaking of which, tomorrow is actually the day where it has been 20 years since I've been to Japan. Went to Japan the first time.
That's great. 20 years to today.
20 years. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Wow. Okay. That's
I would have left today and I would have arrived tomorrow.
That's a huge thing. Yeah. Like, your life's completely different.
Like, I knew it.
Completely different.
I knew that it would change my life. And I told a little white lie as I was leaving because all my friends were going, oh, you're going to have such a great time. You're going to come back with so many experiences, like a year or two. And I'm going, yeah, a year or two. That's when I'm going to be back. And that's what I told my parents. And that's what I told my friends.
Yeah.
And it was a lie.
Yeah.
Because I knew it was a lie.
I got to get the hell out of here.
I was moving there. I wasn't going there for a working holiday. Yeah. I was literally moving to another country.
I knew that was the case. You were not kicking me out of your country.
Yeah. Because there were some friends of mine who got a little bit pissy at me when I didn't come home after a year or two. So, May enjoyed the play school concert. She had a great time. The pianist there does a lot of the work.
Nice. Yeah, the pianist, they really are like the backbone of the whole operation.
They really are.
Yeah.
May bought Jemima, which is one of the main toys from play school. Mm. Bought a Princess Jemima doll with her own pocket money.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. How much does she get, by the way?
She gets $5 a week.
Yeah, that's what Ruby's on. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah. It's folding money, but it ain't, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot. But, you know, May just kind of saves it and then we'll see something and go, I want to buy that. And we go, you can use your pocket money. She goes, okay.
Yeah.
And she loves her Jemima doll. And she's she gives her a party every Saturday now.
Right.
Because that's the day she came to our house. So it's like, oh, it's a week since you got here, party. It's 2 weeks since you got here, it's a party day. So she sets all of her stuffed toys.
Oh, that's so cute.
Around like some pretend food.
Oh,
it's very cute.
That's the best.
Other than that, I think the only thing I really have to report on is that my budgie is munted.
Poor budgie.
So Coco is our beloved budgie.
You can hear him in the background.
You can hear him squawk. We don't take this podcast seriously enough that we move him to a new room.
No, it's not.
During that. This, we just don't do that anymore.
He's the third co-host.
He really is. And unfortunately, he's got a tick in his brain.
Yeah.
Or something like that, where he's no longer able to fly. Basically, he thinks the world is tilted in a way.
Mm.
We think he's getting worse. He doesn't seem to be in any pain or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's looking at us right now. And you kind of, every time you hear like a bang, that's him falling off the perch in his cage.
Poor little fella.
We're very concerned for him, but he seems okay, but he's so docile now.
Yeah.
You can literally just pick him up and he'll just rest in the palm of your hand.
Oh, poor little guy.
Whereas before, he used to zoom around the room and be so accurate that he'd land on a wine glass and then start gulping.
Yeah.
Before you kind of shoot him away. That could be the reason he's munted.
Too much wine. It's probably fine. It's nothing doing double for me, and I didn't think no badly.
No, my parents actually killed a budgie with wine once.
Oh my god, no!
They had a
childhood trauma unlocked.
They had a blue budgie called Sammy, and like Sammy would go around and perch on wine glasses and have a big gulp of wine, and then the budgie died. And I think they told me that an egg got stuck in her, and then she died. But they would also like take photos and like, oh yeah, the budgie used to drink wine. And like years later, I kind of went, Sammy died of fucking alcohol poisoning, didn't she?
Sammy's like, yeah, all the same to me.
Oh, your budgie, your green colors and yellow colors.
Show you all.
Fucking kill your budgie with a cheap party trick.
You let a bird out of a cage in a room with alcohol and they make a beeline for the alcohol. Like
every budgie does.
Every animal just wants to get fucked up and we're just the ones smart enough to know how.
Yes. To this fucking day, I am convinced that the recipe for distilling alcohol is written into our DNA somewhere. Yeah. If you think hard enough about how you want to get fucked up, you just need to meditate and think, all right, I know how to do this. I'm gonna ferment some grapes behind the radiator.
Something with sugar in it and just freaking put it somewhere and wait.
Like, yep. Humans don't actually, like, until fairly recently, like the last few hundred years, didn't actually know what the scientific way of what actually happened to make alcohol. They just kind of knew what the recipe was.
Yeah.
And that's how they did it. It's amazing. Other animals totally take advantage of our
alcoholism. There's monkeys that steal tourists' drinks on that beach. Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the funniest shit ever. Oh man, those monkeys are the best.
They're learning. We might have some evolutionary rivals.
I'm gonna come back as one of those monkeys. Sorry, I'm starting to lose my voice. Maybe this is a good point to end if I'm starting to choke up.
No quiz today.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did have, as a funny joke, I had this idea of doing a quiz about underwater levels in games because of my submarine obsession, but I didn't actually get around to making that quiz, so we can maybe do that next time, perhaps.
Yeah.
Underwater level themed quiz. But, you know, water levels are not everyone's favourites, so maybe it is a good thing that we aren't doing that today.
Yeah.
Because who wants to remember that level from Sonic where you have to eat the bubble? Wants to...
Sonic, his whole thing is, I'm going to go fast. Yeah. Now I'm going to go super slow and I fucking suffocate.
I love that they put that as the second level in the game too. Like they don't even make you wait. They're like
I think it's the third world.
They like, you could have held on to that a bit longer. Man, anyway. Yes. People have complained about that level ad nauseum. But, you know.
Before we go, we did actually tell a bit of a white lie.
Oh?
Earlier we did.
Oh, did we?
Because it turns out we both have had... we both actually have the game Pizza Tower. So now we're going to do a surprise review right now. So Pizza Tower is actually...